live from the Eagle Newsroom in Bryan. It's Aggie Nation, covering Aggie football since the first game in 1894 and every game since. Talking all things A&M and all the pro and high school sports you want to hear. Aggie Nation on Sports Radio 1150, The Zone.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Aggie Nation, powered by the Eagle, Aubrey Bloom, Robert Cessna. We are brought to you by MSC Opus. Check out all the great events coming to the season that dreams are made of at mscopus.org. All the information and tickets for all the events and shows there at mscopus.org. You can give us a call, 693-1150. You can text us, 229-1939. And normally on Tuesdays, what we do is we see if anything stuck out to us from the press conference today, Cease. But no, this is my answer for this one. Nothing really jumped out at me. This is one of the press conferences. No, they're not going to say anything. You can tell they don't really want to be there this week. I mean, they never want to be there, but they especially don't want to be there. They'd rather, you know, just stay behind closed doors this week. And that's kind of what I got out of the whole thing.
One thing did jump out at me when Sam Kahn asked the question about injuries to start out with, Speedy Noel, James White, and Atara Laka, and you expected Kevin Semlin not to answer that. And you always have to ask that question first or real early, which I'm glad Sam did, because sometimes he'll come back to that. Now, he didn't come back to that, but when he talked about the bye week, I immediately wrote it down. He said, "I like our health right now." Well, if he likes their health right now, that tells me that probably James White and Speedy Noel will play. Also, then Kyle Allen, when he was talking, and he said about Speedy being back or made reference to that. Now, I think Alaka, when you read his Twitter account, that he didn't like having a needle in his neck and people wishing him well after his surgery. So I'm guessing, and I understand you can have things scoped and whatever, and you can be out 3 or 4 days. But with someone's comment on that, I would say at least two of those guys have to be back. I don't think you would like your health if you're still missing all three of those guys. So that's the one hidden gem that I took. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but that's what I read into that.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those weeks where you got to get way down in the TV.
Well, I'm saying you did. Yeah. And I did.
Yeah, and Myles Garrett talked a little bit about that before the press conference, too. I don't know if anyone else was there for that quite yet.
But you were.
I was there, and he was talking about that he thought some of their guys that have been banged up have bounced back and all this kind of stuff. So kind of the same, very similar reference that he kind of made. The thing, again, to me, is that there's not a lot of rivalry between the coaching staffs, you know, here. So, I mean, there's not a lot of...
Well, there's a little deal there between Chavis and Lane Kiffin, so that's pretty good.
Well, but there's not a whole lot of history for the most part.
The players aren't going to say, "Oh, let's go win this one for John," or "Let's win this one for Lane."
Yeah, it's not you know, A&M Texas or Baylor TCU or something like Alabama Auburn or a game like that.
It's not like someone's a graduate assistant for what's that
right,
guy's name?
Right,
Saban,
someone out there. So it's
just your typical top 10 matchup.
Yeah, I mean, that's really what I mean. It is in some ways. Because I think A&M knew, and you could tell that's the kind of thing that you've been able to tell from someone for the last couple weeks. I don't even know that he's fully, like, you know, something when someone thinks they have a chance to win a national title, he'll start chirping a little bit, you know, and they did a little bit last year when they went out and killed South Carolina and they had the good start to the season. Man, he came out and told everybody how wrong they were about him so many times and all that kind of stuff. He's not doing that yet this year.
Didn't say people were wrong this year.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, but just as much as we want to see this game play out and how well A&M's going to do against Alabama and how far have they really come since last year and is Kyle Allen an elite quarterback and all these sort of things we want to see on Saturday, I think they want to see those things too. It's one thing to be confident and say, like, "Hey, we've got a chance to win this game." It's another to think we're definitely going to win this game and just, you know, blow this team out of the water or whatever. I don't get that sense from these coaches. I think that they're excited to see what they've got. And I don't know that they know for sure yet.
I think they've – everybody learns a lesson. They're playing Alabama. And until you beat Alabama – and let's be honest, that first year you go in and beat Alabama and go, oh, hey, man, this SEC's pretty nice stuff, whatever, what have you, Heisman winner. And everyone knew that Alabama was laying in wait for A&M last year. Even though they won up here in 2013, A&M had won at Tuscaloosa. And say what you will, I think if I go back and look at my stories, I know I picked Alabama to win, but I thought A&M could go in there and be competitive. And I say be competitive, two touchdowns, maybe a loss, 17 points. I didn't see 59-0 last year at this time. I assure you that. And I think you learn a little bit about that because A&M likes where they're at. I really firmly believe that the players, maybe more so, but the coaches also understand, okay, let's wait. If I'm a coach saying, let's wait till we beat Alabama and go win at Ole Miss before we start saying, hey, maybe you should look at us in the Final Four, because this is a two-step deal. If they beat Alabama, then you got to go beat Ole Miss, because if you turn around and lose to Ole Miss, then you're still chasing Ole Miss. And it's a huge two-step, but I think that's why the coaches are a little cautious, because you're right. Last year, this time, the players, when they were 5-0, not going into Alabama, but when they were 5-0 last year, everybody was feeling pretty good. It's like, oh, they played bad in Arkansas, but they woke up 3.5 quarters. They won the game. They're that good. They only had to play a quarter and a half in overtime to beat Arkansas. You go back to last year. So I think they did have that little bit of an invincible about it. Hey, we were all talking about the national playoff last year. If you go back and pull the show, there were some references to that, but people aren't so much in the Everybody was plugging up Kenny Hill for the Heisman at 5-0, much more than Kyle Allen for the Heisman or even Garrett. I think it's more like everybody's, okay, let's just wait and see. And we all said, I was going to be interested to see how they reacted 5-0. You're right, no smart aleck remarks about, well, we're last year. What are you guys going to say now? I think everyone has learned, let's just move on to the next game. And the next game just happens to be Alabama.
Yeah, and that's the thing that you keep coming back to. I mean, to hear him talk about it, they think they've done all the right things since last year. And let's face it, this is a game that A&M quit last year. I mean, that doesn't happen very often that teams just flat out quit, but A&M quit in this game last year, and they didn't want to keep playing. I mean, you could tell they had no even inclination that they might score in that game, and it was. Frankly, one of the worst games in program history, just as far as a team. It just didn't show up. You get wiped off the map and all that kind of stuff. So they think they've fixed all those problems, that the program is tougher mentally and physically. They think they've made their offense tougher, less prone to teams kind of banging up on them a little bit. They think that they've made the right hire on defense and brought in guys there. And now, just like I said, just like we do, they want to see where they're at. And I think that's the sense that I get from the coaches this week is, we think we're ready, but we want to make sure we're ready. We want to see what we've got out here. And the players know, too. I mean, that's the thing. They know this is Alabama. I mean, they know sure. that everyone's going to be watching. The Alabama's probably not even, you know, by the numbers, what, the third best team on the schedule left? Ole Miss and LSU are both, well, Ole Miss beat Alabama. I know Alabama's ranked higher now. But they're not even, you know, the world beaters that they've been in years past. They're not number one. They're down at 8 or 9 or whatever they are. But that thing is still there. And like Myles Garrett said, you don't have to bring up what happened last year. Everyone knows what happened last year. And I thought that was interesting when he said that early in the press, when he was there for his media availability. He said that's one of those things that motivates you, but it's not a thing you bring up. You know, you don't have to say, hey, guys, these guys beat us 59-0 last year. Everyone knows that they beat you 59-0 last year. So we'll see. We'll see how they bounce back a little bit. But that's the sense I got from... Sometimes you can tell they're excited. I thought Mississippi State, they seemed really excited to get out there and play that game. I thought for Arizona State, they were the same way. Of course, it's the first game of the season, but they were just jacked to get out there and play. This week, I'm trying to find the right word here, because it's not anxious or nervous or apprehensive or anything like that. It's just a little more all right, we're here. Now let's see what we've got. Like, it's not that they're nervous or certainly not afraid of Alabama or anything like that. It's just that they want to see how far they've come. Are they ready to take the next step is the sense I kind of got from today.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. I want to see where they're at. And you can say, you can make an argument that they face some adversity against Arizona State and they faced adversity against Arkansas. But I also felt when the day was done, Arizona State and Arkansas really wasn't good enough to beat A&M. I mean, Arkansas could easily beat A&M one play. But even if they'd have done that when the game was over, and maybe I'm wearing the glasses, when you cover a team, you only see their weaknesses and strengths, and it's so easy to see. But I thought A&M was a better team than Arkansas. Even if Arkansas would have beat them, they could say, well, Sustin, you're a home, you're covered. And that might be the case because you see that team a lot. But I still think if A&M plays Arkansas 10 times, that A&M wins 8 or 9 times.
Yeah, I think they win most of them.
I think they're the best team. But, you know, if they face – they're going to face adversity against Alabama. And you know what? Alabama is good enough. They have the pedigree that they can beat anybody when they get them down. When you make a mistake, you better be ready to rebound. And so I think that's what the team is – you know, the coaches are waiting to see, too. There's going to be adversity. What happens when Kyle Allen gets a stinger on his shoulder when he goes down hard? What happens when they fumble at their own? How good is that defense now when they fumble – at their own 35, can they make Alabama settle for a field goal and maybe miss it? The adversity is going to come there just because Alabama, I'm betting, is by far the best coached team they'll have faced when you consider who they have at what spots and what they've done. And they're definitely the most talented overall. You just have to look at the recruiting classes. But I always look at the coaching. You look at who Saban puts on his staff. All you need to do is see what that guy at Florida's doing. McElwain or McElwaith, I'll mispronounce his name. But
I think you hit it the first time and then messed it up the second time.
But he, in other words, there's – you say what you will about Lane Kiffin. Lane Kiffin, I do believe, does bring something to the team as far as offense. And, you know, Saban probably likes to have somebody around like that that's off the wall, and you'd like to be a fly in the wall. Probably, we're not doing that, Lane. That's a good idea, but, you know, we're not doing that.
Yeah, and you know, this will be A&M's second look at this Kiffin offense.
Yes,
and it has changed a little bit.
Yes, it has.
This is one of those weeks where having John Chavis around is real helpful. Because not only does he have the experience against Nick Saban, I mean, he's been coaching against him forever now. He's at LSU, but I don't know if they actually overlapped. I don't know if Tennessee played LSU, but I would imagine they ran across him at some point. He's been around the block, and even if they weren't coaching against him that year, he at least was watching teams they were playing against, and he's seen everything that they're probably going to throw out there for the most part, especially on defense, where Saban sort of pulls the strings a little bit more than he does on offense. So, like you said, a lot of coaching matchups in this one that are interesting. The Spavital is interesting for me. I almost think Chavis's biggest help in this game is helping out A&M's offense.
Could be.
Because
particularly with the bye week.
You know, and Chavis isn't going to have any shenanigans on his defense. He does what he does, like he said today. They do the same thing. They've been doing it since in the 80s, and that's kind of what he's going to do. So as far as the matchup on that side, it's just more, is Alabama good enough to exploit the things that A&M's not great at? Can they slow down the pass rush enough to get a ball downfield and test A&M's secondary? That's more of a execution than it is the strategy. The one that could help a lot is Chavis with Spavadol saying, like, you know, hey, this is how I would defend what you're doing. This is how they're going to defend what you're doing. And that sort of thing I think could help a lot. So we'll see, I guess.
I think that's it. And also is the deal about Chavis. It's one thing to say you know what he's going to do, but you don't know how he's going to line up Garrett, because over the years he's lined up two of his best pass rushing ends right over the center for plays. He's moved people around with his linebackers. I do expect maybe a Locker to be out. So what does he do with his linebackers? How does he bring linebackers? Does he come with more corner blitzes or more linebacker blitzes? Or does he think he doesn't even have to blitz? He'll just send four and one linebacker. So there are things that he's different. He's going to bring pressure, but how does he bring that pressure? But I agree with you. I think two things. Number one thing is his experience of playing Alabama and when he was at LSU and Tennessee, I think that'll permeate into his players, onto the defensive side. I think he'll have them physically and mentally jacked up for 2 weeks, ready to play. a physical Alabama team that's very demanding. But the flip side is, I agree with you, because when you look at last year, come on, we kind of the fact that A&M's defense got run over at times didn't surprise me. The fact that Cooper had big games, I even forget their quarterback now, that got out and had a couple nice runs. The fact that Kiffin was able to do some things with Sims didn't surprise me. What surprised me that A&M's offense was absolutely out to lunch. They couldn't pick up a yard.
They were terrible.
They couldn't do anything. So I think that was some of an indictment on Spavital, but he's a young guy. So you're right. I want to wait and see how Spavital bounces back, because he's got a lot more weapons. Yeah. He's going against not as good of Alabama defense. And it's like you said, he does have Chavis. At some point, they probably watched plays last year, and Chavis probably said, well, here, you should have done this. You probably should have come out and did a little more of this, because it's not 59-0. It starts out 7-0, 14-0. Yeah. And you have chances to – and A&M – didn't do anything. A&M never stemmed the tide. And A&M's always going to, quote, stem the tide on offense, you'd think, first. Even though with Chavis, they do create turnovers. But I'm looking for when Alabama makes big plays, where A&M's going to make big plays is on their offense. So I'm looking to see how Spavital has improved from last year in the Alabama game.
Yeah, it's a big game for him. He's still a young coordinator. It's only his second full year calling plays, and he's got to show something in big games, and that's a good opportunity for him this weekend. All right, we're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll have Lori Corbelli talk about Aggie volleyball a little bit. Hit us up. What do y'all want us to talk about? 229-1939, your takes, your questions, your comments, your debates, whatever you want to send us, let us know. 229-1939. We'll be back with Lori after this. It's Aggie Nation powered by the Eagles, Sports Radio 1150 and The Zone FM 102.7.
For well over 10 years, Intercon has been telling consumers that vinyl windows are the best option for this climate. Now, there are a number of vendors offering a vinyl solution, but don't be misled. All vinyl windows are not the same. Changing in their windows in your home is a major investment that you only want to do once. Ask to see a sample window and use your common sense. Does the window look and feel solid and substantial? Look at how the window operates. Does it have a continuous balance system or a cheap setup with pulleys and strings? Ask about the U factor and solar heat gain coefficient, which are standard energy performance metrics. Finally, ask about who will be installing the window and who will be standing behind the warranty. At Intercon, we use the Burris TechView line of windows made to our size specifications installed by Intercon full-time employees. We stand behind our products with industry-leading limited lifetime warranties. Trust your neighbors at Intercon with all of your window needs.
Whether you have new construction or an existing home, let the fine folks from Intercon help your home energy efficiency year-round. Call Brad Beard of Intercon today at 823-3639. That's 823-3639.
St. Joseph Eagle football fans, here's a reminder for you to listen to St. Joseph Eagles football throughout the season on 88.5 FM. St. Joseph Eagle football is brought to you this season by these fine local businesses:
Krause's Paint and Body, Jackie Voss Allstate Insurance, Citizen State Bank, and Memorial Funeral Chapel.
Listen to St. Joseph Eagles football on 88.5 FM. Special thanks to all of our St. Joseph Eagle football sponsors.
Atkinson at Pace to Stay believes that strong future leaders are in our schools right now.
If you're a high school senior, join your classmates and commit to attending all of your classes this year.
At the end of the school year, Atkinson Toyota Scion is giving away a new Scion, or you could win one of many scholarships.
Details are available at atkinsonatpacetostay.com and on Facebook.
Good luck, seniors from Atkinson Toyota Scion, Mid-South Synergy, The Eagle, Brian Broadcasting, KBTX Media, Prosperity Bank, and Merrill Lynch.
Walking, running, jumping, stretching, pulling, pushing. Any repetitive motion can cause wear and damage to your body. Using advanced diagnostic equipment and computerized technologies, the orthopedic sports medicine physicians and therapists at Scott & White Healthcare can treat all of your sports injuries, no matter how complex. Don't get sidelined by injuries. Pursue your passion in top form. Visit sportsmedicine.sw.org for more information.
1 week fantasy football at DraftKings means every moment could take you closer to a life-changing payday. Play when you want and pick a new team every time. Use code Louie to play free for a shot at $1 million in this week's Millionaire Maker event, only at DraftKings.com.
Tune in to Tex Eggs Radio. Each Monday and Friday for Aggie Football Talk with Billy Lucci. Go straight to the source with Luch on Sports Radio 1150 and The Zone 102.7 FM.
Here's a chance to dance our way out of our constriction. Gonna be freaking up and down the hang-up alleyway. With a groove I only got, we shall all be moved.
Welcome back. Aggie Nation, powered by the Eagle, Aubrey Bloom, Robert Sussman. We're joined, as we are every Tuesday, Seath, by A&M volleyball coach Lori Corbelli. Coach, how are we doing today?
Good. How are you guys doing?
We're plugging away one story, one show, segment at a time until this weekend.
Lots going on.
It's gonna be a wild one around here. And not only is obviously football in town, y'all are in town as well. This weekend should be a fun one around here. Let's go back to last week first.
Okay.
The tough match with Florida, and then. You come back with South Carolina, which I know there was some concern over travel and all that stuff getting there, but you're able to get the win there. Just how did you feel your team played in those two matches, and what were your kind of just reactions from those?
Yeah, well, it was a really stressful weekend. I'll just start off with that. It was not knowing if we were going to have drinking water in South Carolina, knowing that the whole city had closed down due to the flooding. Could we have our hotel rooms? Or were people that were homeless now moving into these hotel rooms? So there were a lot of logistics that we had to get cleared up. But at Florida, we certainly got a team that had been on the road two or three matches and had lost in the fifth set, very unusual for Florida, and got back some healthy players after being injured, and we got the brunt of it. They came at us just beating balls at us, and so we didn't really have a very good start. We made it really difficult for us to really get our game going, and it was their fault. I mean, Florida had everything to do with it. They were so on. It was crazy. But we regrouped and headed to Columbia. And, they just decided to find a way to win that one. It was not pretty at all. What we had been doing the previous week, we were here at home. We were running our offense really, really smoothly and really balanced. We had, same number of sets going to our middles as we did to our right sides, and things were just really flowing for everybody. And I think they thought that, after the Florida mess up, that we would get to South Carolina and, everything will be back to normal. And it wasn't. The first set was just a disaster. We couldn't get a pass to the setter. We couldn't get an attack off without making an error. And it was really, the looks in the girls' eyes was a strange look. And I knew it was going to be a long day. And yet, we just kept mixing and matching some players. We took some players off that were really struggling and put some others on, and ended up Jazz Babers and Ashley Reeser helped us attack our way to the victory. I thought Ipley, our setter, was doing a really steady job, and our libero did too. She is passing beautifully right now, and we have to have her on the floor for our passing. She just kind of headed it up and just did a really nice job there. So, yeah, I was really pleased with coming out of there with a win, and we just wanted to get out of there fast because I didn't want anyone to call us back in there. It was a really close call.
Can that help your team when you win a game, win a match, despite not playing particularly well?
I keep thinking that whole flight home, I was like, well, we pulled out a match where they came at us with everything they had, and we fought. We never quit fighting. We just weren't very sharp, and we had to figure out ways to get, to get the victory. And so, it wasn't easy at all. We had to, I think we went through a lot of adversity on our own doing, and that was frustrating. And so as that frustration built on the court, they also were finding ways to get some excitement and celebration, which is really important in volleyball. Like, if you get a rally of a couple of points in a row, you can only build on that momentum with a big celebration and a big, here's what we're doing next, next ball. And it's such a ebb and flow game that they were really still doing a great job of the things they knew they needed to do.
You've got a 3-home match in a row stretch coming up here, Alabama, Mississippi State, LSU. For where y'all are at, what y'all are trying to do for the postseason, your positioning for postseason play, how crucial are these next three matches?
Oh, they're really, really important. You know, these are teams that, you know, Alabama is, they're coming back from a few injuries early in the season where they flipped around their lineup, and now they're back to what they were last year when they finished third in the conference. They didn't lose anyone from that team. They had just a few out for a while, but now they're back, and they just beat Missouri in a 5-set match at home, and you know, they're gonna have a lot of wins the rest of October, November. So to be able to have a victory against Alabama, who matches up with us beautifully, I mean, not in a sense like great for us. It means it's going to be great volleyball, like very competitive point by point volleyball, because we're really similar in our balance and in our defense and in our blocking. And so we've got to really be prepared for this Alabama team that's going to come in, and really they're looking to just get on a good run right now. And Mississippi State is a totally revamped team. They were at the bottom of the league last year, but this year they've got a new coach, they've got a new system, they have a whole new style of play, and they're doing some damage off and on. Not as consistently yet as Alabama is, but Mississippi State is going to be a tough team to deal with.
Weekend here in town. I guess no football team for the volleyball girls, huh?
You know, we're going to get to go. Yeah,
we're going to
Friday night, and then Saturday they're taking recruits to Yale practice after our match. Yeah, and then they have an 11 o'clock curfew on a night before a game. So, yeah, right. But no, they're going to get to experience it, and I think it'll be our second, and then the third one is Auburn, the football game.
Oh, okay.
Against Auburn, we're here, and those are the three we get this year. So, yeah, we're excited about it.
Well, yeah, I was wondering, because I know that we talked to Coach G, and sometimes that they'll go for a half, or he'll let them go for a little bit, but yeah. It seems like you don't mind quite as much if they're over there for that one. Do y'all see do y'all see larger crowds when y'all have the home games the night before the football team plays? Does that help the atmosphere a little bit?
Oh yeah, I think so. You know, I think a lot of people are on campus. They hear about the volleyball game, they come on over, and also the Sunday after. You know, we've got lots of schools that come out and lots of Aggie fans that are still around. So definitely is a lot of fun, and we have tons of promotions Friday night for the Dick Pink breast cancer awareness match, with some auctioning off some jerseys. Some jerseys, but also tickets for football, tickets for basketball. I think the first 250 people that come to the door get free pink T-shirts, and I think you wear pink and you get in for $3. So they just put it out there as just come and support this team against Alabama, support breast cancer awareness, and it should be Friday night's going to be a lot of fun.
Coach, should be a good time and a good cause over there Friday night. That'll be 6:30 at Reed Arena, then 1:30 on Sunday. Coach, good luck this weekend.
Thanks so much, Aubrey. Y'all have fun.
There you go. See, always good to talk to Corbell. Getting ready for a big weekend. As you said, those three home games in a row are going to be crucial for their late season run. After that, they play a couple in a row at home. It's not that all that unusual the way the SEC volleyball schedule sets up, but a couple big matches there for them.
Well, you look at where the standings are, and I should pull them up from me because I actually typed them in the system last night, and I want to say there's something like 5 or 6 teams in there that's 3-2. They're all bunched up together, A&M being one of those teams. You're playing teams that at home, this three-match streak where they got a chance to do some damage and win these games. And as Lori said, they're going to be evenly matched. But in the back of her mind, I think she's got to feel like you want to be 6-2 when you head out of town again. You got to take advantage of the home court, because they've had these road games, and they've already given up one match at home, because I know Arkansas came in here. That was pretty much a toss-up when you look at it. Then they lost that, and I see Arkansas is ranked and A&M's not. So you got to take advantage of these situations when you're playing teams that you're pretty comparable to. And she said it starts right off the bat with Alabama.
All right, we're going to go to break. When we come back, y'all's text 229-1939. Sam will be in here. We'll see what y'all want to talk about. We will weigh in on everything from yesterday's just bizarre day of news this upcoming week and what we liked in the SEC, stuff we wanted to see, all that kind of stuff. So hit us up, 229-1939. We'll be back. It's Aggie Nation, powered by the Eagle, here on Sports Radio 1150 in the Zone FM 102.7.
From News Talk 1620 WTAW, I'm Chelsea Reber with a news update on Sports Radio 1150 and the Zone 102.7 FM. Tonight's Bryan City Council meeting includes a proposed zoning change a half mile east of Blinn College's new campus. Landowners on the north side of Leonard Road want to build retail and commercial buildings, and behind that, 245 manufactured homes to rent, and behind that, 68 manufactured homes to sell. The lawyer representing the applicant, Chris Peterson, told the Planning and Zoning Commission last month they've been working on their project for nearly a year.
Actually, this development was in the works before anybody had any announcements about Blinn College being there. That is why we're asking not just for manufactured land lease community in Tract 2, but it's why we also asked for multifamily housing to be available, because at some point there may be a need for apartments instead of manufactured land lease. We don't think that's going to be the case, but we definitely want to deal with market conditions.
Peterson also addressed opposition from landowners south of Leonard Road due to drainage issues and increased noise and traffic. P&Z sent the proposal to the council with a 4-3 vote recommending approval. Last week's decision by a Brazos County District Court jury to send convicted capital murderer Gabriel Hall to death row marks the first time that's happened in Texas since last December. The president of the anti-death penalty group Texas Moratorium Network, Scott Cobb, says that's a reflection of changing times.
Well, what's clearly different is that people are beginning to have questions about the use of the death penalty and whether it's a punishment that they still want to support in 2015.
Three others convicted of capital murder in Texas this year were sentenced to life without parole. Classes at College Station Middle School are expected to resume tomorrow after a water leak canceled classes today. For more, go online to WTAW.com. I'm Chelsea Reber on Sports Radio 1150 and the Zone 102.7 FM.
Give your truck authority. Texas Truck Riggins will help you hook up your rig the way you want it with a wide variety of truck accessories, spray-in bed liners, grill guards, toolboxes, goosenecks, and more. The best products well within your budget. We can also powder coat patio furniture, old iron beds, and wheels, just to name a few. All with quick turnaround and straightforward answers to your questions. Visit Texas Truck Riggins on South College Street across from the Lake of the Bryan Municipal Golf Course. Find us on Facebook or visit us at txtruckriggins.com.
When you think of Texas A&M Athletics on the Zone, think of the businesses sponsoring the games of your favorite team.
Businesses like Team Auto in Navasota, Zwarneman Flooring, and the Sleep Station.
Here's a big gig'em to these sponsors of Texas A&M Athletics. You're listening to the flagship station for Texas A&M Athletics, Sports Radio 1150 and the Zone 102.7 FM.
Once an Aggie, always an Aggie. Just minutes from the A&M campus, Watercrest at Bryan Retirement Community celebrates the 12th man with all of the great benefits of quality senior living. Choose your 1, 2, or 3-bedroom designer residence featuring great views of Kyle Field and the camaraderie of fellow Aggies. Watercrest at Bryan, a game day Aggie broadcast partner, invites you to take a personal tour today. Visit watercrestbryan.com and customize your lifestyle in the heart of Aggieland.
1 week fantasy football at DraftKings means every moment could take you closer to a life-changing payday. Play when you want and pick a new team every time. Use code Louie to play free for a shot at $1 million in this week's Millionaire Maker event, only at DraftKings.com.
Spend your weekdays with Tex Ags Radio, Louie Bellina, Aggie Nation, and Chip Howard. Spend your weekdays with The Zone, FM 102.7, and Sports Radio 1150.
If you want me to stay, I'll be around today to be available for you to see. I'm about to go, and then you'll know for me to stay, I got to be me. You'll never be.
Welcome back. Robert Bloom, Robert Cessna, Aggie Nation, powered by the Eagle. We're hanging out, talking about, well, a little bit of everything. Y'all can hit us up, 229-1939. What are your key matchups, your key questions? What's your confidence level? All that kind of stuff about the game this weekend. We want to hear it. Again, 229-1939. See, when I we talked a little about this yesterday, and when, you know, we come back to this game and all this kind of stuff, the player I keep coming back to is Kyle Allen. And I know that Jay Coker and all the athletes they have over there on offense, Ridley and all the guys that they've got, and their defensive front is as good as anyone in the country and all that kind of stuff. But to me, this is all about Kyle Allen and just how good he is if A&M's going to win this game. Is there someone else that when you think about this game, you immediately go, like, you know, this guy is going to be a big deal? I mean, for me, this is almost a game that Myles Garrett isn't going to have a factor on, because if he does, then something went horribly awry for the Alabama offense, because you can bet that they're going to roll their guys away, they're going to double, they're going to chip, they're going to all those things that Chavis talked about today in the press conference. He would be A&M's, you know, other great player. You know, on defense, he's easily their best player, and yet I don't know that this is the kind of game where he has a big impact.
Well, I'm with you, because if you watch what Alabama's done over the years, and I say it's on defense, you could say, well, they take the best player away. They couldn't take Johnny Manziel away. They couldn't take Mike Evans away. But, of course, defense is different, because you can put three people on Garrett. You can chip him. You can double-team him. You can align your offense. To line the way you want. So I'm with you. It's going to be very hard for Myles Garrett to go ahead and dominate this game, because Alabama's going to have so much pregame planning of how they're going to handle them. That being said, as we've said it several times, does that mean the Deshaun Halls and the Quaylen Cunninghams, did they come up? But, you know, one guy, you keep going back to Cal Allen. I'm impressed the way Cal Allen does his progressions, throws the football, so I'm getting back to the offensive line. If the offensive line can allow A&M to have some semblance of a running game, not dominate a running game, and can keep him pretty much upright and be able to get the second and third progression sometimes. But, see, I keep going back to that offensive line. And we've talked to other people. We do when we're sitting around these press conference. Now, does that mean that if Fetty's got to have his best game of the year? Probably. Does that mean that the guard, where they're alternating people sometimes, or I guess it's Sutherland, and I don't have my depth chart right here in front of me, but really, all those offensive linemen, I kind of consider Mike Matthews a given, so I'm thinking the rest of the guys, Cheek, Fetty, these guys are going to have to step up, because if I'm Alabama in their workrooms, if I'm preaching to where I think I have an advantage, I'm going to be saying, hey, you can't give this quarterback time. If this quarterback gives us time, his receivers are just flat out too good. They're going to find the weak matchup. It's going to be fit. They're going to 10 to 15 yard us to death. Then, boom, it's going to be a 35-yarder. So I am all over my D-line, because I don't want to bring pressure. And Alabama doesn't like to bring pressure. Alabama's traditionally not. I want to preach to my front, and what they do, a three-man front, really, that I want my three men, if I'm Alabama, that A&M needs to have four guys to count for those three guys, because then I feel I've got an advantage.
See, that I almost don't go to the offensive. The reason I don't go to the offensive line right away is I don't expect him to be able to run the ball. If they do, that's like a bonus for me. To me, that's the thing.
Well, I'm not saying run the ball. I'm just saying keep him where he can do his progressions, because if I'm coming free with one guy, we know Allen can get rid of the ball quick, but getting rid of the ball quick is not necessarily what they want to do all the time. They don't want dump offs all the time, because I don't want, if I'm A&M, I don't want Carson out on Ragland one on one all the time, because I think Alabama's going to win a lot of those matches. So sometimes sacks don't tell the story. You need to say, how quickly do people get rid of the ball?
The thing for me about Allen, though, is when he's got to make a few, I don't find a good way to word this here, elite is the word we coming back to, but
all conference type. Who's your all conference?
Three or four throws that very few other people can make. Whether it's on the run and he's able to find a guy late, or he, you know, is able to get a ball out and down the field really well, you know, quickly or something. I think that's what he's got to do. He's got to help his offensive line out a couple times in this game, whether it's escaping pressure once or twice, whether it's, you know, extending a play a little bit with his legs. Maybe it's third and four, and, you know, there's no one open, so he runs for a key first down. He's got to do a few of those things this game if A&M's going to win. Because, and someone texted this, they said no turnovers, 125 yards rushing, Aggie wide receivers shine, all three necessary for A&M victory. They're not going to get 125 yards rushing unless something just really unprecedented happens in this game. No one can run on this team.
No one has.
And A&M is a, I don't want to say terrible, but they're an average at best running team so far this season. Now, there could be wrinkles in the run game we haven't seen yet, and which, again, would fall under the unprecedented things we've yet to see. Because that's my thing. A&M's not going to be able to run it. I'd be surprised if they even try, frankly, all that often.
Well,
except in short yardage situations where they're going to have
some special deals with Murray. I think they might try to do some running special things with Murray. Maybe.
I can see that, but I don't count that as – that's
maybe, but that still counts in your rushing yards.
Yeah, but that's more of scrambling yardage.
No, I'm saying maybe put Murray back there in the shotgun with Allen. I mean, you could get a lot of wild things.
Sure. They could do some of that stuff. Then, again, unprecedented things we haven't seen before.
If you get four runs for 15 yards or more from Murray just alone, that's 60 yards. Saying it can be done. And, that's why I was kind of surprised against the Mississippi State game we didn't see Kyler Murray. But I keep going back. I wonder if he was 100%. And it's just speculation. He might only have been 90 or 95%. And once again, this is just reading the tea leaves, which I'm glad you mentioned that. But I want him 100% from Alabama because maybe I want him in there for 10 plays just to make smart and Saban have to worry about something else, because they said at some point, okay, what happens if they do put Murray back there with Allen? I would think Alabama has covered that, but it's one thing to cover it in a meeting. It's another thing to see that on the field, because no one has seen Kyler Murray. Nobody else in this league has the kind of speed at quarterback that Murray's going to give them, I don't think, right now.
Yeah, and if he, that falls back on the things we haven't seen them do yet. In the backfield and stuff like that. To me, 125 yards rushing is way too high. A&M needs 50 yards rushing, because if they can get 50 yards rushing, that means they picked up some big key plays. This to me is going to be like a 70-30 passing game.
Yeah, when I looked at Collins's longest run was 5 yards.
Yeah,
and he's a pretty good back.
Well, and their offensive line is good at
running.
And
I'm saying 5 yards.
And maybe you rip off a couple big ones and you're able to pad your stats a little bit. But I think 125 is too hard of a mark for me. If A&M gets 50 yards, they've got a good chance in this game, because 50 yards. Is a lot in the run game. I mean,
that goes back to, I hate putting numbers on it, because we're going to tell.
Well, if they both could have 700 yards based on how this game goes.
Well, I'm just saying is they might only rush effectively, you're right, for 60 yards, but if they keep the people worried about running and they have a little success, then their passing game's going to work. So I always hate putting numbers on it. Because people go, so if so-and-so rushes for 200 yards, they'll win. Well, not necessarily. I mean, just don't put a number on it. I want to see, can they run their – how much is their offense is going to be run under duress? I thought last year every play was under duress.
Well, and some of that was the A&M's own fault. I mean, they were
self-inflicted.
They were throwing to – you know, the plays were too obvious. I mean, they were like we said, they were so predictable there towards
they come out in that part of the they come out in their season. First plays a bomb to Sabian Holmes. I'm a little bit worried, you know. I just put it that way.
Yeah, and I don't know. Like I said, we'll see.
Now,
someone said Alabama will bring pressure. It's the same guy. He said Alabama will bring pressure if the Aggie wide receivers get separation, draws and traps will work. 125 yards. Is key. Alabama's 72nd in the country in tackles for loss, so it's not a huge part of their game. They do sack the quarterback a little more often this year than they usually do.
Like 2.6 per game, I'll say.
Yeah, and they're in the top 25 in that this
year. Their stats aren't impressive when you look at them. Now, here's something. You talk about throwing things out already. Did you notice there was a couple of people asking questions, and we broke down to individuals. There's a few people think that A&M might do a lot more two tight ends or a tight end and an H-back formation, and I'm trying to say To me, I think that would play in Alabama's hands.
I would think you want to keep it as spread out as possible.
But that's just me. Everybody's got their own opinion.
Yeah.
I mean, I would think Alabama. I wouldn't play on A&M coming out with a tight end and an H back. But you know, I mean, I don't know.
How about this way? If A&M runs for 125 yards, they win this game by 2 touchdowns. I'll go that far.
And you'll walk to College Station if it happens.
Yeah, I just don't think they'll do that. Unless there's parts of the run game we haven't seen, or they do some shenanigans with Kyler Murray or that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I just don't think they have the guys to do it, especially if James White's not 100%, or is he even playing? Because with just Trey Carson. You know, if his longest carry was 5 yards like it was for Arkansas, that right there is 25 carries to get to 125 yards. So I think that's part of the problem.
I think I agree with you. You will modify it. If A&M's running backs get over 80 yards, A&M's home free.
Because that would be a lot of yards. And that's part of the deal. Everyone talks about balance, but you don't have to be balanced if you're really good at one thing. And A&M's really good throwing the ball. So it's almost wasting time at times to run it. But the question isn't 125 yards. It's not even 50 yards. It's when A&M has a 3rd and 1 in, you know, crucial time. They don't want to put the ball in the air because you never know if an incompletion or whatever. You want to keep the clock running and you want to pick up a yard. Can they do that? And that's really all that matters for me in the run game.
And if I could just expand that a little bit. See, I think you've touched on something because I'll say another thing. What does A&M do? A&M runs a spread. So, to me, another thing is 2nd and 2 to get the first down, because too many times A&M gets behind, caught behind the line in that running play, and a 2nd and 2 becomes a 3rd and 4. And that's, people don't understand, that's when you need to pick up the 2 yards. Not sometimes when it's 3rd and 1 and 3rd and 2, but can you move the chains on 2nd and 2? See, I've seen A&M, nice outlook pass, they hurry up, they run up, the shotgun or whatever, they pitch it to Carson. He gets nailed behind the line. See, that's what gets me mad watching. I go, well, you just created a great situation. You're going from a great situation to a so-so situation. 3rd and 4, you can't run it anymore. You're going to pass it, and you're too predictable.
Someone else mentioned as a key player, Diamond Wilson. It's a good one.
Yeah, well, right now, he's the guy. If you're in Vegas right now and you're betting on the board, I'm betting Donovan Wilson, because he's had a history. If you're going to say who's going to force a fumble, who's going to do that, whatever, and other than Garrett, I'm putting money on Wilson.
Someone else said Brandon Williams, and I agree to the point. It's a different type of good. Brandon Williams needs to not be bad. He doesn't need to be good. I don't know if that makes sense to what I'm saying.
But it does to me.
Yeah, he doesn't necessarily have to have a great game. He just needs to not have a bad game for A&M this weekend. But yeah, that will be important. All right, we got to catch a break. Let's come back. We'll hit some more of y'all's text. 229-1939. It's Aggie Nation, powered by the Eagle, here on Sports Radio 1150 in the Zone FM 102.7.
It's the best time of year to buy from the best farm and tractor retailer in the Brazos Valley, Norman G. Tractor. Get 0 down payment, 0% financing, top dollar for your trade-in, and free delivery. Get the Kubota L2501F 25-horsepower two-wheel drive tractor with a 5-foot Land Pride shredder and a 5-foot Land Pride box blade with teeth. And $2,250 in rebates for only $11,245 or $160 per month. Want your tractor to do even more? Well, try the Kubota L2501HST 25-horsepower tractor with four-wheel drive, Kubota front-end loader, 5-foot Land Pride shredder, and box blade with teeth. Get $2,250 in rebates. Pay only $18,145 or $231 per month. Why buy used when you can buy new with payments as low as these? That's why Norman G. Tractor is known as the place to shop for all of your tractor, utility vehicle, and lawn equipment needs. Shop online at normangtractor.com, corner of Highway 39 and OSR in Norman G. And remember, nobody beats Norman G. Tractor. Nobody.
Green Teams welcomes the Texas A&M University Construction Science Department to its family of customers. Like many other businesses, Texas A&M's Construction Science Department uses Green Teams for interior landscaping. Green Teams also offers short-term plant rentals for events like weddings and conferences. Make your work environment more pleasant with plants. For more information about interior landscaping, call Susie Gallagher with Green Teams, 823-7551. Green Teams.
Merry Christmas!
Does your Christmas wish list include a store full of Christmas shoppers? To make sure your business has a Merry Christmas, you need a partner capable of delivering a powerful marketing message full of holiday cheer. That partner is Brazos Family Magazine, a local publication filled exclusively with local articles. For more information about Brazos Family Magazine, contact Santa's Elves at Brian Broadcasting.
Aggie fans, the Kevin Sumlin Radio Show is at Rudy's Barbecue on Harvey Road for the 2015 football season. Show features the coach, questions from the floor as he joins the fans to talk some Aggie football. It's 7 o'clock, Rudy's Barbecue on Harvey Road each Tuesday night. Of course, you'll hear it all here on the Aggie Radio Network. But we'll see you at Rudy's each Tuesday at 7. It's the Kevin Sumlin Radio Show. Come and join us for 1 hour of all things Texas A&M football.
If you're a high school senior, join your classmates and commit to attending all of your classes this year.
At the end of the school year, Atkinson Toyota Scion is giving away a new Scion, or you could win one of many scholarships.
Details online and on Facebook.
Study the teams and the games by the numbers with Dave Bartu of the College Football Matrix. Thursdays at 11:30 on the Louis Belina Show. Powered by teamofnavasota.com.
Welcome back. Aggie Nation, powered by Eagle, Aubrey Bloom, Robert Cessna. Cease, why don't we, I haven't done this in a few days. Why don't we hit the people a little today in Aggie history?
All right.
And now, ta-da! Today in Aggie history.
Got a couple. October 13, 2001, Mark Ferris set a Texas A&M record for consecutive completions during a single game with 14. He was 30 of 49 in a loss to Colorado. We joked about this one a while back. I don't know how you go 30 of 49 and only score 21 points, but they found a way.
Is that still the record, 14? Can't be by now.
It's 14 straight. I don't know. I'm
kind of surprised with this offense. But they do take a lot of vertical shots.
Yeah.
That's what got me to think about it. I go, is it really 14?
Well, because I tried to look it up because Allen was on the way in the Arkansas game. And then he had that one that got tipped down or whatever. I was wondering how far he made it. I think he got to like 12 or 13.
We also
got to
remember, A&M hasn't thrown the ball effectively
for a long time.
Yeah. You keep forgetting that. I go, wow. That's why the first thing I thought of. No offense to Mark Ferris, who I remember quite well. But 14, huh?
The big one today that most people remember, October 13th, all the way back in 2012, A&M Louisiana Tech. The Wild Night in Shreveport. It was one of the weirdest football games I've ever seen in my entire life.
It's one of those great games. I had a rough time running up down the steps, whatever. I remember seeing Carl Malone.
The internet wasn't working.
We blew deadlines so bad that night. I think those above us still cringe when he mentioned that night because I don't think we went out to like 3 a.m. I mean, seriously, it was one of the worst nights ever at the Eagle.
Yeah. Well, and I wasn't working for y'all yet. I wasn't working for us. If you want to word that.
That's good.
But I was there covering the game, and there was there was no internet in the press box. I mean, people having to call in their stories. And
it was horrible.
No one could find the food. It was just one of the weirdest nights of anything.
Well,
we
tried to do so much, and it was so late, and we were.
The game started like at 9 it was.
And the press box is like my garage. It's horrible.
But again, it was a great game for A&M, and Johnny Manziel set a then record. I think he broke it again later, but for total yards in SEC history, in fact, he threw for 395, rushed for 181, including just some of his.
I always remember him running down the guy.
Yeah, the fumble that didn't happen. Yeah, Kristen Michael fumbled going into the end zone, and the guy took off, and Manziel turned around and ran him down.
It was awesome.
Yeah, it was bizarre plays, right? And then the play where they ran the counter to him and he ran for the long touchdown. It was one of those nights where you went, man, this guy really is just that good. I mean, it was a weird game. And it was a wild. They needed every single one of those 59 points.
I have to laugh. A lot of people keep going back. If A&M would only played the Louisiana Tech game, maybe they'd have beat Florida. I always have to laugh. There's no guarantee you would have beat Louisiana Tech the first game out of there.
Yeah.
That team could score. That team had some weapons.
And the coach Kingsbury even said later that they didn't really know what they had in Manziel.
Correct.
When they played Florida. In this case, they wouldn't have known what they had when they were playing Louisiana Tech. So as good as he was that night, there's no guarantee.
They might have lost.
Yeah. And, man, that game just had all kinds of weird things happen.
It was a great game to look back and laugh at, but I wasn't laughing that night. I was sweating bullets.
Oh man, yeah. Like I said, it was quite the affair over there in Shreveport. But there's your today in Aggie history, October 13, 2012. Johnny Manziel leads a wild 59-57 win over Louisiana Tech. All right, we're gonna go to the big break. When we get back, Sam will be with us. He's en route. He says he's on tarot. So he's on the way.
Is that some kind of play, Tarot?
Well, it's a TV show, Arrow, but I don't know if that's the other one. And then, of course, we'll get to whatever y'all want to talk about.